However, the headmaster has located the additional enchantment on the sorting hat, and he's shown it to a special panel of the Wizengamot. As a result, Mr. Hagrid's sentence has been revoked. Just this morning, in fact, and he will be allowed to acquire a new wand.
She hesitated.
We have not yet told Mr. Hagrid of this, Mr. Potter. We were waiting until the deed was done, so as to not give him false hope after so long. Mr. Potter, we were wondering if we could tell Mr. Hagrid that it was you who helped him.
She saw the weighing look in his eyes.
I remember Mr. Hagrid holding you when you were a baby,
she said.
I think he would be very happy to know.
She could see it, though, on Harry's face, the moment when he decided that Rubeus wouldn't be any use to him. Harry shook his head. Bad enough that someone might deduce there was a parcel mouth in this year's crop of students, Harry said. I think it'd be more prudent just to keep it all as secret as possible. She remembered James and Lily, who'd never hesitated to return the friendship the huge, bluff man had offered them, for all that James was the scion of a wealthy house, or Lily a budding charms mistress, and Rubeus a mere half-giant whose wand had been snapped.
"Because you don't expect him to prove useful, Mr. Potter?"
There was silence. She hadn't intended to say that out loud. Sadness crossed Harry's face.
"Probably," Harry said quietly. "But I don't think he and I would get along. Do you?"
Something seemed to be stuck in her throat.
"Speaking of making use of people," Harry said, "it seems I'm going to be thrown into a war with a Dark Lord sometime soon. So, while I'm in your office, I'd like to ask that my sleep cycle be extended to 30 hours per day. Neville Longbottom wants to start practicing dueling. There's an older Hufflepuff who offered to teach him, and they invited me to join. Plus, there's other things I want to learn too, and if you or the headmaster think I should study anything in particular, in order to become a powerful wizard when I grow up, let me know. Please, direct Madame Pomfrey to administer the appropriate potion, or whatever it is that she needs to do."
"Mr. Potter!"
Harry's eyes gazed directly into her own.
"Yes, Minerva? I know it wasn't your idea, but I'd like to survive the use the headmaster's making of me. Please don't be an obstacle to that."
It almost broke her.
"Harry,"
she whispered in a bare voice,
"children shouldn't have to think like that."
"You're right, they shouldn't," Harry said. "A lot of children have to grow up too early, though. Not just me. And most children like that would probably trade places with me in 5 seconds. I'm not going to pity myself, Professor McGonagall. Not when there are people out there in real trouble, and I'm not one of them."
She swallowed hard and said,
"Mr. Potter, at 30 hours per day, you'll get older. You'll age faster, like Elvis."
"And in my 5th year, I'll be around the same physiological age as Hermione," said Harry. "Doesn't seem that terrible."
There was a wry smile on Harry's face.
"Honestly, I'd probably want this even if there weren't a Dark Lord. Wizards live for a while, and either wizards or muggles will probably push that out even further over the next century. There's no reason not to pack as many hours into a day as I can. I've got things I plan to do, and 'twere well they were done quickly."
There was a long pause.
"All right,"
Minerva said. It came out as almost a whisper.
She raised her voice.
All right, Mr. Potter. I shall ask the headmaster, and if he agrees, it shall be done.
Harry's eyes narrowed for a moment.
I see. Then please remind the headmaster that Godric Gryffindor, in his last words, said that if it had been the right thing for him to do, then he wouldn't tell anyone else to choose wrongly. Not even the youngest student in Hogwarts.
And she knew with a hollow feeling that any chance of Albus stopping this, stopping any of this, had just vanished into nothingness. That was what Albus had told her when she'd objected that Cameron Edward was too young, and then when she'd objected that Peter Pevensey was too young, and finally she'd given up objecting.
Who told you that, Mr. Potter? Not Albus? Surely Albus would never say that to any student.
I've been doing a lot of reading lately, Harry said.
His body started to rise from the enveloping chair, then halted.
Dare I ask about the second piece of good news?
Oh,
she said.
Professor Quirrell has woken up. And says that you may...
The Hogwarts infirmary was a brilliantly open space, skylit on all four sides, despite seeming to be located squarely in the middle of the castle. White beds in long rows stretched out, only three of them occupied at the moment. One older boy and one older girl on opposite sides, both lying motionless with their eyes closed, probably unconscious and spellbound while some healing charm or potion reconfigured their bodies in uncomfortable ways, and the third occupant had the curtain drawn around their bed, which was presumably a good thing. Madame Pomfrey had pushed him along with a hard shove and told him not to gawk, and Harry had needed to remind himself sharply that some people still didn't know who the boy who lived was. Either that, or Madame Pomfrey's identity was bound up with her absolute dominance of her own hospital, etc. Whatever. Behind the rows of beds were five doors leading into the private rooms where they stored the patients who would be staying for days, instead of hours, but whose condition didn't warrant a transfer to St. Mungo's. Windowless, skyless, unlit but for a single smokeless torch on one side of the solid walls, that was the room behind the middle door. Harry had wondered whether professors could ask Hogwarts to change itself, or if the infirmary always had a room like that available for people who didn't enjoy the light. In the centre of the room, between two equal bedstands that looked to have been carved from the same grey marble as the walls, rested a white hospital bed, looking vaguely orangish in the unsmoking torchlight. And within that bed, a white sheet pulled up about his thighs and wearing a hospital gown, sat Professor Quirrell, with his back slightly propped up against the headboard of the bed. There was something frightening about seeing Professor Quirrell in one of Madame Pomfrey's beds, even if the defense professor appeared uninjured. Even knowing that Professor Quirrell had deliberately arranged his own apparent defeat at Severus's hands to give himself an excuse to recover his strength from Azkaban, Harry had never actually watched anyone dying in a hospital bed, but had seen too many movies. It was an imitation of mortality, and the defense professor was not supposed to be mortal. Madame Pomfrey had told Harry that he was absolutely forbidden to pester her patient. Harry had said, "I understand," which technically did not say anything about obedience. The stern old healer had then turned and started to say to Professor Quirrell that he was absolutely not to overexert himself or upset himself. Madame Pomfrey had trailed off hurriedly, turned around and fled the room.
Not bad,
Harry observed after the door had shut behind the escaping medical matron.
I've got to learn how to do that sometime.
Professor Quirrell smiled a smile with absolutely no humour content, and said, his voice sounding a good deal drier than its usual dryness,
"Thank you for your artistic critique, Mr. Potter."
Harry stared into the pale blue eyes and thought that Professor Quirrell looked older. It was subtle. It might have just been Harry's imagination. It might have been the poor lighting. But the hair above Quirinus Quirrell's forehead might have receded a bit. What remained might have thinned and greyed, an advancing of the baldness that had already been visible on the back of his head. The face might have grown a little sunken. The pale blue eyes had stayed sharp and intense.
"I'm glad," Harry said quietly, "to see you in what appears to be good health."
"Appearances can be deceiving, of course," said Professor Quirrell. He gave a flick of his fingers, and when his hand finished the gesture, he was holding his wand. "Would you believe that woman thinks she has confiscated this from me?"
6 incantations, the defense professor spoke then. 6 of the 30 that he had used to safeguard their important conversations in Mary's room. Harry raised his eyebrows, silently quizzical.
"That is all I can manage for now," said the defense professor. "I expect it shall prove sufficient. Still, there is a proverb. If you do not wish a thing heard, do not say it. Consider it to apply in full measure. I am told that you were trying to see me."
"Yes,"
Harry said. He paused, gathered his thoughts.
"Did the headmaster or anyone tell you that we can't go to lunch anymore?"
"Something along those lines," said the defense professor,
and without changing expression,
"of course I was terribly sorry to hear it."
"It's more extreme than that, actually," said Harry. "I'm confined to Hogwarts and its grounds indefinitely. I can't leave without a guard, and a good reason. I'm not going home for summer, and maybe not ever again. I was hoping to speak with you about that."
There was a pause. The defense professor exhaled a breath like a brief sigh and said,
"We shall just have to rely on the known fact that the deputy headmistress will personally murder anyone who tries to report me, Mr. Potter. I intend to keep this conversation on track so that we may conclude it quickly. Is that understood?"
Harry nodded and, in the light of the single torch, shaded toward the reddish end of the optical spectrum, the snake's green scales were not very reflective, and the blue and white banding hardly more so. Dark seemed the snake in that light. The eyes, which had seemed like grey pits before, now reflected the torchlight, and seemed brighter than the rest of the snake.
"So," hissed the venomous creature, "what did you wish to say?"
And Harry hissed,
"Schoolmaster thinks that woman's former lord is the one who stole her from prison."
Harry had thought about it this time, and carefully, before he had decided that he would reveal to Professor Quirrell only that the headmaster believed that, and not say anything about the prophecy which had set Voldemort on Harry's parents, nor that the headmaster was reconstituting the Order of the Phoenix. It was a risk, a significant risk, but Harry needed an ally in this.
"He believes that one is alive,"
the snake finally said. The divided two-pronged tongue flickered rapidly from side to side, sardonic, snakish laughter.
"Somehow I am not surprised."
"Yes,"
Harry hissed dryly.
"Very amusing, I'm sure. Except now I'm stuck in Hogwarts for next 6 years for safety. I have decided that I will indeed seek power, and confinement is not helpful for that. Must convince Schoolmaster that Dark Lord is not yet awakened, that escape was work of some other power."
Again the rapid flickering of the snake's tongue. The snakish laughter was stronger, drier this time.
"Amateur foolishness."
"Pardon?"
hissed Harry.
"You see mistake. Think of undoing, setting time back to start. Yet not even with hourglass can time be undone. Must move forward instead. You think of convincing others they are mistaken. Far easier to convince them they are right. So consider, boy, what new happenstance would make Schoolmaster decide you were safe once more. Simultaneously advance your other agendas."
Harry stared at the snake, puzzled. His mind tried to comprehend and unravel the riddle.
"Is it not obvious?"
hissed the snake. Again the tongue flickered sardonic laughter.
"To free yourself, to gain power in Britain, you must again be seen to defeat the Dark Lord."
In reddish-orange flickering light, a green snake swayed above a white hospital bed as the boy stared into the embers of its eyes.
"So,"
Harry said finally,
"let us be clear on what is proposed. You suggest that we set up imposter to impersonate Dark Lord."
"Something like that. Woman we rescued will cooperate. Should be most convincing when she is seen at his side."
More sardonic tongue flickering.
"You are kidnapped from Hogwarts to public location. Many witnesses. Wards keep out protectors. Dark Lord announces that he has, at long last, regained physical form, after wandering as spirit for years. Says that he has gained still greater power. Not even you can stop him now. Offers to let you duel. You cast guardian charm. Dark Lord laughs at you. Says he is not life eater. Casts killing curse at you. You block. Watches see Dark Lord explode."
"Cast killing curse?"
Harry hissed in incredulity.
"At me? Again? Second time? Nobody will believe Dark Lord could possibly be that stupid."
"You and I are only two people in country who would notice that,"
hissed the snake.
"Trust me on this, boy."
"What if there is third someday?"
The snake swayed thoughtfully.
"Could write different script for play if you wish. Whatever scenario should leave open possibility Dark Lord might return yet again.
nation must think they are still dependent on you to protect them."
Harry stared into the red flickering pits of the snake's eyes.
"Well,"
hissed the swaying form. The obvious thought was that going along with the defense professor's plots and deceptions a second time, spinning an even more complicated lie to cover up the first mistake, and creating another fatal vulnerability if anyone ever discovered the truth, would be exactly the same sort of stupidity as the putative Dark Lord using the killing curse again. It didn't even take his Hufflepuff side to point that out. Harry thought it in his very own mental voice. But there was also a certain question as to whether the appropriate moral to learn from the last experience was to always say no immediately to the defense professor, or...
"We'll think about it,"
hissed Harry.
"We'll not answer right away this time. We'll enumerate risks and benefits first."
"Understood," hissed the snake. "But remember this, boy. Other events proceed without you. Hesitation is always easy, rarely useful."
The boy emerged from the private room into the main infirmary, running nervous fingers through his messy black hair as he walked past the white beds, occupied and unoccupied. Shortly afterward, the boy emerged from the Hogwarts infirmary entirely, passing Madame Pomfrey on the way out with a distracted nod. The boy walked out into a hallway, then into a larger corridor, and then stopped and leaned against the wall. The thing was, he really didn't want to be stuck in Hogwarts for the next 6 years. And when you thought about it, the incident with rescuing Bellatrix from Azkaban wasn't just imposing costs on Harry. Other people would be worrying, living in fear of the Dark Lord's return, expending unknown resources to take unknown precautions. Harry could demand that they write the script in such a fashion as to make it seem not plausible that the Dark Lord would return a third time. And then people would relax. It would all be over. Unless, of course, there actually was a Dark Lord out there to be feared. There had been a prophecy. The boy, leaning against the wall, vented a soft sigh and started walking again. Harry had almost forgotten, but he had gotten around to showing Professor Quirrell the deck of cards he'd been given on Sunday by Santa Claus, within which the King of Hearts was allegedly a portkey that would take him to the Salem Witches Institute in America. Although, of course, Harry hadn't told Professor Quirrell who'd sent him the card, nor what it was supposed to do, before he'd asked Professor Quirrell if it was possible to tell where the portkey would send him. The defense professor had transformed back to human form and examined the King of Hearts, tapping it a few times with his wand. And, according to Professor Quirrell, the portkey would send the user somewhere in London, but he couldn't pinpoint it any nearer than that. Harry had shown Professor Quirrell the note that had accompanied the deck of cards, saying nothing of the earlier notes. Professor Quirrell had taken it in at a glance, given a dry chuckle, and observed that if you read the note carefully, it didn't explicitly say that the portkey would take him to the Salem Witches Institute. "You needed to learn to pay attention to that kind of subtlety," Professor Quirrell said, "if you wanted to be a powerful wizard when you grew up, or, indeed, if you wanted to grow up at all." The boy sighed again as he trudged off to class. He was starting to wonder if all the other wizarding schools were also like this, or if it was only Hogwarts that had a problem. Chapter 66 Self-Actualization, Part 1.
"Hesitation is always easy, rarely useful.
So the defense professor had told him, and while you could quibble about the details of the proverb, Harry understood the weakness of Ravenclaws well enough to know that you had to try answering your own quibbles. Did some plans call for waiting? Yes, many plans called for delayed action, but that was not the same as hesitating to choose. Not delaying because you knew the right moment to do what was necessary, but delaying because you couldn't make up your mind. There was no cunning plan which called for that. Did you sometimes need more information to choose? Yes, but that could also turn into an excuse for delaying, and it would be tempting to delay when you were faced with a choice between two painful alternatives, and not choosing would avoid the mental pain for a time. So you would pick a piece of information you couldn't easily obtain, and claim that you couldn't possibly decide without it. That would be your excuse. Although, if you knew what information you needed, knew when and how you would obtain that information, and knew what you would do depending on each possible observation, then that was less suspicious as an excuse for hesitating. If you weren't just hesitating, you ought to be able to choose in advance what you would do once you had the extra information you claimed you needed. If the Dark Lord were really out there, would it be smart to go along with Professor Quirrell's plan to have someone impersonate the Dark Lord? No. Definitely not. Absolutely not. And if Harry knew for a fact that the Dark Lord wasn't really out there? In that case... The defense professor's office was a small room, at least today. It had changed since the last time Harry had seen it, the stone of the room becoming darker, more polished. Behind the defense professor's desk stood the single empty bookcase that always decorated the room, a tall bookcase stretching almost from the floor to the ceiling, with seven empty wooden shelves. Harry had only once seen Professor Quirrell take a book from those empty shelves and never seen him put a book back. The green snake swayed above the seat of the chair behind the defense professor's desk, the lidless eyes staring unblinkingly at Harry from close to his own eye level. They were warded now by 22 spells, all that could be cast within Hogwarts without attracting the headmaster's attention.
"No!"
hissed Harry. The green snake cocked its head, tilting it slightly. No emotion was conveyed by the gesture, not that Harry's parcel-mouth talent conveyed to him.
"Reason not!" said the green snake.
"Too risky," Harry said simply.
That was true, whether or not the Dark Lord was out there. Forcing himself to decide in advance had made him realize that he'd just been using the unanswered question as an excuse to hesitate. The sane decision was the same, either way. For a moment, the dark pitted eyes seemed to gleam blackly. For a moment, the scaled mouth gaped to expose the fangs.
"Think you have learned wrong lesson, boy, from previous failure. My plans are not in a habit of failing, and last one would have gone flawlessly but for your own foolishness. Correct lesson is to follow steps laid down for you by older and wiser Slytherin. Tame your wild impulses."
"Lesson I learned is not to try plots that would make girl-child friend think I am evil or boy-child friend think I am stupid,"
Harry snapped back. He'd been planning a more temporizing response than that, but somehow the words had just slipped out. The ing sound that came from the snake was not heard by Harry as words, only as pure fury. A moment later.
You told them!
Of course not, but know what they would say.
There was a long pause as the snake head swayed, staring at Harry. Again, no detectable emotion came through, and Harry wondered what Professor Quirrell could be thinking that would take Professor Quirrell that long to think.
You seriously care what those two think?
Came the snake's final hiss.
True younglings, those two are. Not like you. Could not weigh adult matters.
Might have done better than me,
Harry hissed.
Boy-child friend would have asked after secret motives before assenting to rescue woman.
Glad you understand that now,
the snake hissed coldly.
Always ask after others' advantage. Next, learn to always ask after your own. If my plan is not to your taste, what is yours?
If necessary, stay at school 6 years and study. Hogwarts seems fine place to dwell. Books, friends, strange but tasty food.
Harry wanted to chuckle, but there wasn't any gesture in Parseltongue for the kind of laughter he wanted to express. The pits of the snake's eyes seemed almost black.
Easy to say that now. Such as you and I, we do not tolerate imprisonment. You will lose patience long before 7th year, perhaps before end of this one. I shall plan accordingly.
And before Harry could hiss another word of Parseltongue, the human shape of Professor Quirrell was sitting in his chair once more.
So, Mr. Potter,
said the defense professor, his voice as calm as if they'd been discussing nothing important, and as if the whole conversation had not occurred at all.
I hear that you have begun to practice dueling. Not the worthless sort with rules, I hope.
Hannah Abbott looked as unnerved as Hermione had ever seen her, except on the day of the Phoenix, the day Bellatrix Black had escaped, which shouldn't ought to count for anyone. The Hufflepuff girl had come over to the Ravenclaw table during dinner and tapped Hermione on her shoulder and very nearly dragged her away.
"Neville and Harry Potter are learning dueling from Mr. Diggory,"
Hannah blurted as soon as they were a few steps away from the table.
"Who?"
said Hermione.
"Cedric Diggory,"
said Hannah.
"He's the captain of our Quidditch team and general of an army, and he's taking all the electives and getting better grades than anyone. And I hear he learns dueling from professional tutors during the summers, and he once beat 2 7th-year students, and even some teachers call him the Super Hufflepuff, and Professor Sprout says we should all emudate him or something like that, and..."
After Hannah finally stopped for air, the list had gone on for a while, Hermione managed to insert a word in edgewise.
"Sunshine Soldier Abbott,"
said Hermione.
"Calm down. We're not going to be fighting General Diggory, right? Sure, Neville's studying to beat us, but we can study too. Don't you see?"
Hannah shrieked, raising her voice a lot louder than it should have been, if they were trying to keep the conversation private from all the Ravenclaws looking at them.
"Neville isn't studying to beat us. He's practicing so he can fight Bellatrix Black. They're going to go through us like a bludger through a stack of pancakes."
The Sunshine General gave her soldier a look.
Listen,
said Hermione.
I don't think a few weeks of practice is going to make anyone an invincible fighter. Plus, we already know how to handle invincible fighters. We'll concentrate fire on them, and they'll go down, just like Draco.
The Hufflepuff girl was looking at her with mixed admiration and skepticism.
Aren't you even, you know, worried? Oh, honestly,
said Hermione. Sometimes it was hard being the only sensible person in your whole school year.
Haven't you ever heard the saying, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself?
What? Said Hannah.
That's crazy. What about Letherfolds lurking in the darkness and being put under the Imperius curse and horrible transfiguration accidents and... I mean...
said Hermione, exasperation leaking out into her now raised voice. She'd been hearing this sort of thing all week now.
How about if we wait until after the Chaos Legion actually crushes us to get so scared of them and... Did you just mutter Gryffindors under your voice?
A few moments later, Hermione was walking back to her place at the table with a sweet smile plastered onto her young face. It wasn't the terrible, cold glare of Harry's dark side, but it was the scariest face she knew how to make. Harry Potter was going down.
This is loony,
gasped Neville with what tiny amount of breath he could spare from being completely out of breath.
This is brilliant, said Cedric Diggory.
The eyes of the super Hufflepuff gleamed with manic enthusiasm, shining like the sweat on his forehead as he stamped his feet through the dance of one of his dueling postures. His usually light steps had changed to heavier stomps, which might have had something to do with the transfigured metal weights they'd all attached to their arms and legs and strapped over their chests.
"Where do you get these ideas, Mr. Potter?"
"A strange old shop in Oxford, and I'm never shopping there again."
Thud.
Chapter 67 Self-Actualization, Part 2. In the high reaches of Hogwarts, where rooms and corridors changed on a daily basis, where the territory itself was uncertain, and not just the map, where the stability of the castle began to fray into dreams and chaos without changing its architectural structure or apparent solidity, in the high reaches of Hogwarts, a battle would soon be fought. The presence of so many students would stabilize the corridors for a time by dint of constant observation. The rooms and corridors of Hogwarts sometimes moved even while people looked directly at them, but they wouldn't change. Even after 8 centuries, Hogwarts was still a little shy about changing in front of people. But despite that transient permanence, the defense professor had said, the upper reaches of Hogwarts still had military realism. You had to learn the ground anew each time and check every closet for secret corridors all over again. Sunday it was. Sunday, the 1st of March. Professor Quirrell had recovered enough to supervise battles once more, and they were all catching up on the backlog. The Dragon General, Draco Malfoy, watched 2 compasses he held in either hand. One compass was the colour of the sun, and the other had a multicoloured, iridescent sheen to indicate chaos. The other 2 generals, Draco knew, had been given their own compasses. Only Hermione Granger's hand and Harry Potter's hand would hold a compass that was orange-red and flickered in its reflections like fire, pointing always to the direction of the largest active contingent of Dragon Army. Without those compasses, they might have searched for days and never found each other, which was a territorial hazard of fighting in the upper levels of Hogwarts. Draco had a bad feeling about what would happen when Dragon Army found the Chaos Legion. Harry Potter had changed since Bellatrix Black had escaped. The heir of Slytherin had begun to seem truly lordly now. And how had Professor Quirrell known that would happen? Draco would have felt a lot better with Hermione Granger standing alongside him with her 23 Sunshine soldiers in tow. But no. The Sunshine General was being stupidly proud and refusing to accept aid against General Potter. She wanted to take down Potter herself, she'd told him. The noble and most ancient House of Malfoy had maintained their influence over Britain for centuries by understanding that you couldn't always be the most powerful. Sometimes another lord was just stronger, and you had to settle for merely being his foremost lieutenant. You could build up quite a position of wealth and power over a dozen generations of being second in command. You just had to be careful each time, not to let your house be dragged down with the fall of the lord you served. That was the Malfoy tradition which centuries of experience had honed. And so, Father had thoroughly explained to Draco that if he ran into someone who was obviously stronger than him, Draco was not to resent this and not to deny it, and not to throw a tantrum that could sabotage his potential position. But Draco was to make sure that his place in the next generation's power structure wasn't any lower than second. Granger, apparently, had never gotten this lecture from her own parents, and was still in denial about the obvious fact that Harry Potter was becoming stronger than her. So, Draco had secretly met with Captain Goldstein and Captain Bones and Captain Macmillan, and they'd agreed to all do their best to make sure that Dragon and Sunshine didn't engage each other before they engaged the larger threat of Chaos. It wasn't really violating the agreement against traitors. You weren't soliciting traitors if you honestly meant to help the other army. A high, ringing tone belled through the corridors to signal the start of the battle, and a moment later Draco shouted, "Go!" And the dragons started running. It would tire his soldiers. It would cost them something, even after they stopped and caught their breath. But they had to put Chaos directly between themselves and the Sunshine Regiment. Harry and Neville walked at a leisurely pace through the corridors, Harry watching the yellow golden compass that pointed toward the location of the Sunshine Regiment, and Neville keeping a lookout just in case they ran into someone else. Their footsteps sounded a bit thumpy, if you listened closely. "So," the chaotic lieutenant said after a while, "that's why you had us practice dueling with all that weight strapped on." Harry nodded, keeping his eyes on the compass that led to Sunshine. If the apparent direction started to change quickly, then they were getting close.
"I didn't want to say anything in front of the others, but a couple of weeks isn't a lot of time to put on extra muscle," said Neville. "And the balance is different, and I think this weighs more, actually. And doesn't this count as transfiguring a Muggle artifact?"
No, Harry said. "I checked that in advance. You can see it in Hogwarts statues, so some wizards used to wear it, even if they were just being fashionable for the Dark Ages."
And since nobody would ever try this if they weren't fighting first-year students using weak spells like the Sleep Hex, it didn't count as giving away good ideas either. They came to a Y intersection, An annoying one. Neither corridor bent in quite the right way to take them on a direct intercept course toward where Sunshine would go as they followed the Chaos Legion following Dragon Army. So Harry chose what seemed like the better of the two options, and Neville followed.
"We'd better try a quick silencing charm on this stuff when we get close," Neville said. "It's kind of noisy. They might figure it out."
Harry nodded and then said,
"A good idea,"
in case Neville hadn't been looking at him. They trudged on through the stone-floored corridor of the upper reaches of Hogwarts, lit by windows of plain glass or stained glass, now and then passing statues of witches and dragons, and even the occasional wizard knight in plate armor or chainmail. The Sunshine soldiers were striding through a long, wide corridor with their wands out and pointed. They couldn't use the prismatic shield while they were maneuvering, but Parvati Patil and Jenny Rustad were currently maintaining contagos around the officer group, who would be the first targets of any ambush. Their tactic for the next battle, as she and her officers had decided, would be to mix directly in with the enemy soldiers as fast as possible. After having practiced among themselves how to support one another, avoid hitting each other, and get into positions where enemy soldiers would hesitate to fire. They'd only gotten in 4 hours' practice, but she thought her troops would already be better at that kind of mixed-in fighting than soldiers who hadn't practiced at all. It seemed like the sort of tactic Chaos would use, but they hadn't actually used it yet. It was a good strategy, she believed. And yet still, no matter how much she'd lectured her soldiers, they'd persisted in whispering fearful rumours about what Harry and Neville were learning to do. Finally, she'd gone off and talked with Captain Goldstein, who understood things like troop morale, and Anthony had suggested...
"That's weird,"
Captain Macmillan spoke up suddenly, frowning at the fiery and iridescent compass he held in either hand. And he was, as Harry would have termed it, good at spatial visualization, and so had been designated to hold both compasses and try to figure out what their enemies were doing.
"I think... Dragon's not moving fast anymore. I think they got on the other side of Chaos from us first, and it looks like Chaos is moving to attack them instead of trying to maneuver out from in between."
Hermione frowned, trying to understand, and she saw similar frowns on the faces of Antony and Ron. If Chaos and Dragon attacked each other straight out and spent all their forces fighting each other, that was practically conceding the battle to Sunshine.
"Butter thinks we're allied, so he's attacking Malfoy now, before Dragon can link up with us,"
said Blaise Sabini from the common ranks of soldiers.
"Or Potter just thinks he can beat both armies in a row, if he attacks them separately."
The Slytherin boy gave a condescending sigh.
"Ah, are you going to promote me back to officer now? You lot are hopeless without me, you know."
They all ignored the talking noises coming from Zabini's mouth.
"Are we still moving in the right direction?"
said Antony.
"Yeah,"
said Ernie.
"We're getting close to him,"
said Ron.
"Not yet."
That was when the huge black wooden doors at the end of the corridor flew open and crashed into the wall, revealing two figures, almost completely enveloped in grey cloaks, grey cloth stretched over their faces beneath the grey hoods, one of those figures already raising a wand and pointing it directly at her. And then, the face of the game changed drastically, as Harry's voice, high and strained with the effort, screamed the word,
"Stupefy!"
The dueling-grade stunner blasted toward her. She was so shocked that she didn't start to move until almost too late, as the red jet of light smashed right through the contagio shield to their front, and she just barely dodged, There was a tingle on her arm as the red light went past her, and she saw out of the corner of her eye Susan getting hit and blown off her feet into Ron.
"Somnium!"
bellowed Anthony's voice, followed a moment later by a dozen voices crying,
"Somnium!"
Hermione frantically pushed herself to her feet, and, as she rose, she saw the two figures in the grey cloaks just standing there. You couldn't see sleep hexes, the spell was too weak, but there was no way they all could have missed.
"Stupefy!"
shrieked the voice of Neville Longbottom, and another red jet shot at her. She fell in an undignified heap as she desperately twisted out of the way, and when she scrambled up, panting, she saw that this time the stun bolt had gotten Ron where he'd been rising from the ground.
"Hello there, sunshine,"
said Harry's voice from beneath his hood.
"We're the Grey Knights of Chaos,"
said Neville's voice.
"We'll be your opponents for this battle," said Harry's voice, "while Chaos's other army slaughters the dragons." "And by the way," said Neville's voice, "we're invincible."
The two boys in their grey cloaks and robes, a grey cloth over their faces, stood facing Sunshine's entire army, seemingly unfazed by a dozen sleep hexes. Daphne heard a soft sigh from beside her, and when her head turned, she saw that Hannah's lips were parted, and the Hufflepuff girl's eyes were huge, and she was staring at... It would have been hard to describe the jumble of thoughts that flashed through Daphne's mind as she realized that Hannah was staring at Neville rather than Harry, which in turn seemed to trigger some part of her into noticing that, in point of fact, Neville had been getting pretty interesting lately, as boys went. In fact, right now, the last scion of Longbottom was seemingly downright cool, and something woke up inside her, and her own lips parted, and everything the lady, her mother, had ever instructed her about demure demeanours and flattery and scented shampoo blew straight out of her mind so hard it should have fluffed her hair about her ears, because she'd watched Hermione and Harry, and she knew how she wanted her own courtship to go. Her lady mother had also recently instructed her on a few spells it might be embarrassing not to know if you belonged to the noble and most ancient house of Greengrass. Daphne's wand swung to point to her left, and she shouted,
"Tanara!"
The wand went over her head, and she spoke the incantation,
"Revarum Caravaria!"
And finally, she grasped her wand in both hands and shrieked,
"Luxus Gladius!"
The huge magical drain almost sent her to her knees, but she bore it, and when the blazing shape had fully formed and stabilized, the drain was a little less. Still, she had a feeling she'd better not try to fight with this for long. That everyone was staring at her went quite without saying, and she should have leapt forward to confront Neville with her hair billowing around her, but it was all she could do to walk forward steadily to level her most ancient blade at Neville Longbottom. That everyone moved aside and made way for her also went without saying.
Hight Daphne of the noble and most ancient house of Greengrass," she cried. "Greengrass of Sunshine!"
The dueling forms had gone completely out of her mind. She'd seen enough plays to remember death challenges and blood challenges, but she couldn't remember at all what was appropriate for this. She just pointed the incandescent sword toward the object of her crush and yelled,
"Let's see what you got, Nevy!"
Once again, Harry's voice shrieked,
"Stupefy!"
And later on, when she was remembering this, she could never quite believe she'd managed to do it. But she slashed out with her blade of light like it was a beater's bat and hit the stun bolt back at Harry, who just barely managed to twist out of the way.
"Tanara!"
shouted Neville of the noble and most ancient house of Longbottom.
"Revarum! Calvaria! Lucas! Gladius!"
For a few seconds, no one did anything but stare at Neville and Daphne as they started whacking at each other. They were both moving slowly, and Hermione guessed that the spell was taking a lot of strength out of them. It wasn't very impressive by comparison, if you were a Muggleborn and you'd watched certain movies, but you still had to give them extra credit for using lightsabers at all.
"A point of order," said Harry's voice. "I know the defense professor is watching, but I still have to ask. Does anyone know whether they'll slice each other in half if they actually hit..."
"No,"
Hermione said absently. This had been in one of her history books, though she had no idea the magical dueling sword looked like that.
"They cast it, so it'll only stun if it touches."
"You know that spell?"
"Oh, no. It's the charm of the most ancient blade. It's only legal for noble and most ancient houses to use."
Hermione stopped talking and looked at Harry, or Harry's grey hood, rather.
"Well," said Harry's voice, "I guess I could take down the rest of the Sunshine Regiment by myself, then."
She couldn't see his face, but his voice sounded like he was smiling.
"You dodged when Daphne hit your own spell back at you,"
Hermione said.
"So whatever you did, you're not invincible. A stupefy can still get you."
"Interesting theory," said Harry's voice from beneath the hood. "Got anyone in your army who can test it?"
"I read about the stunning hex once," said Hermione, "a few months ago. I wonder if I can remember the instructions right."
Her wand came up to point at Harry. There was a slight pause, as nearby, a boy and a girl, breathing in audible gasps, slowly whacked at each other with lightsabers.
"Of course," Harry said, leveling his own wand on her. "I can just use Somnium on you. That'll take a lot less effort."
New Contago Shield sprung into existence in front of her, cast by Jenny and Parvati, even as Harry spoke. The tip of Hermione's own wand began making small motions in the air. A diamond within a circle, a diamond within a circle, rehearsing the gesture to match exactly what she remembered seeing in the book. It would be a difficult feat, even for her, but she had to cast the spell right on the first try. She couldn't afford any failed castings that would sap her energy.
"You know," said Hermione Granger, "I understand it's not really your fault, but I'm getting tired of hearing people talk about the boy who lived like you're some kind of god or something."
"Same here, I must say," said Harry Potter. "It's sad how people keep underestimating me."
Her wand kept rehearsing the diamond within the circle, over and over. Harry would be recharging his own strength, she knew, even as she practiced as much as she could before her attack.
"I'm starting to think you need taking down a peg, General Chaos."
"You could be right,"
Harry said equably. His feet began to shuffle through what she recognized as a duelist's stance.
"Unfortunately, there's nothing left that can defeat me now except another Harry Potter."
"Let me be specific, Mr. Potter. I'm taking you down a peg."
You and what other army?
You think you're pretty cool, don't you?
Said Hermione.
Why, yes, said Harry. Yes, I do. Some might call that arrogant, but am I supposed to be the last person in Hogwarts to notice how awesome I am?
Hermione raised her left hand into the air and made a fist. It was a signal. 8 designated soldiers in her army would be pointing their wands at her and quietly casting Wingardium Leviosa. They'd practiced this, too, once Hermione had given up on lecturing her soldiers, and, at Antony's suggestion, tried giving them a sunshine general who looked like she could defeat invincible enemies.
"You pretend you're Superman," said Hermione.
She raised her left fist higher in the air, and the 8 soldiers supporting her hovered her off the ground.
"Well, here's Super Hermione!"
Her hand pushed forward, and as she shot rapidly through the air toward Harry, regretting only that she couldn't see the look on his face, her wand made a diamond within a circle, and she summoned up all the magic she could. It felt like she imagined touching a live wire would feel as the too powerful spell poured through her when her voice screamed,
"Stupefy!"
The red bolt burst from her wand, perfectly formed. Harry dodged it. And then, because they hadn't practiced doing this part inside of hallways, she crashed into a wall.
"Somnium!"
shrieked Draco, and then, after only a few seconds to recharge,
"Somnium, curse you!"
He knew he was hitting Theodore. The other boy wasn't even trying to dodge, but the Scion of Knot only grinned as evilly as his father and leveled his wand. Draco managed to leap aside just as Theodore said,
"Somnium!"
But Draco was getting winded. He couldn't keep this up. Theodore wasn't bothering to dodge at all, while Draco had to keep moving. This was crazy. He had enough strength now to fire again, but...
"Stupidity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result,"
Harry had said. This was Harry's work, somehow. It couldn't be a Muggle artifact anymore, but Draco couldn't figure out what it could be. And he should be thinking of hypotheses and ways to test them, but he was too busy frantically dodging as Theodore laughed and shot another sleep hex at him. Draco felt a little numbness in his side that time as he twisted. That had been a very, very near miss. And finally, Draco couldn't take it anymore. He didn't bother working out what theory he was testing or why, as he just...
"Luminos!"
shouted Draco, and Theodore was haloed in red light.
"Dulac!"
And it went out again. So, Theodore was still being affected by magic.
"Expelliarmus!"
And Theodore's wand went flying. That had been a good spell to cast anyway, now that Draco realized it. But Theodore was rushing toward Draco with his arms outstretched to grapple, so Draco yelled,
"Flipendo!"
And the other boy's feet were abruptly yanked up. And Theodore's back hit the ground with a surprisingly loud and metallic-sounding crash. Draco's vision was swimming now from casting 4 spells in such fast succession, and Theodore was already scrambling to his feet, so there wasn't even time to think in words, but Draco still managed to say,
"Somnium!"
And this time he aimed for Theodore's face instead of the chest. Theodore dodged. He dodged! And the boy shouted,
"Code 7 on Malfoy!"
"Prismatis!"
cried Padma's voice, and there was suddenly a shimmering rainbow wall in front of Draco, just as 4 chaotic voices cried,
Somnium!
And there was a pause as everyone looked at the huge prismatic sphere protecting the remnants of Dragon Army. Casting that fifth spell had sent Draco to his hands and knees, but he looked up and managed to say, as clearly as he could,
"If the sleep hex doesn't work, aim for the face. I think the lieutenants are wearing metal shirts."
"You've already lost too many soldiers,"
Finnegan said loudly from across the barrier.
"We'll beat you anyway."
And then the Gryffindor boy laughed evilly. He did the evil laughter almost as well as Harry Potter by now, and the other chaotic legionnaires started laughing with him soon afterward. Draco could see from the corner of his eye where Gregory and Vincent lay unconscious. Padma was still sustaining the prismatic sphere, the largest one he'd ever seen her cast, but she was breathing hard, still visibly sweating from when they'd all jogged to get into position. The Ravenclaw girl was a strong witch, but not an athletic one. He really hoped General Granger got here soon and hit Chaos from behind. General Potter and Neville of Chaos were missing, and Draco could guess where they'd gone. But two soldiers couldn't delay the whole Sunshine Regiment for too long all by themselves, could they? She knew it wasn't fair, that the other girl had given all she could, but Hermione still wished that Daphne had lasted longer.
"Legan!"
said Neville's voice from behind her as she flew, and there was the sound of a prismatic wall shattering. Hannah's voice desperately cried,
"Somnium!"
And then a few moments later, Neville's voice calmly said,
"Somnium!"
And there was a thud of another of her soldiers falling over. And the force keeping her in the air diminished again. Hermione could feel the grab of the hover charms straining at her. But now, it just wasn't enough. Her flight stopped, and she began falling in slow motion toward the ground, and she should have signaled her soldiers to just drop her. But she was too angry and confused and not thinking fast enough and still trying to muster the strength for one last stunning hex, and so there was nowhere to go when Harry pointed his wand at her and said,
"Somnium!"
And that was the last word that Hermione Granger heard of her battle. Chapter 68 Self-Actualization, Part 3. Hermione wasn't feeling very nice right now, or good either. There was a hot ball of anger burning inside her, and she wondered if this was something like Harry's darkness, though it probably wasn't even close, and she shouldn't have felt that way over some silly little game, but her whole army. Two soldiers had beaten her whole army. That was what she'd been told after she woke up. It was a little too much.
"Well," Professor Quirrell said.
From close up, the defense professor didn't look quite as healthy as he had the last time she'd been in his office. His skin looked paler, and he moved a little slower. His expression was as stern as ever, and his gaze as penetrating. His fingers tapped sharply on his desk. Rap, rap.
"I would guess that of the three of you, only Mr. Malfoy has guessed why I've asked you here."
"Something to do with noble and most ancient houses?"
said Harry from beside her, sounding puzzled.
"I didn't violate some kind of crazy law by firing on Daphne, did I?"
"Not quite," the man said with heavy irony. "Since Miss Greengrass did not invoke the correct dueling forms, she is not entitled to demand that you be stripped of your house name. Although, of course, I would not have permitted a formal duel. Wars do not respect such rules.
The defense professor leaned forward and rested his chin on steepled hands, as though sitting upright had already tired him. His eyes gazed at them, sharp and dangerous.
General Malfoy, why did I call you here?
General Potter against the two of us isn't a fair fight anymore,
Draco Malfoy said in a quiet voice.
What?
Blurted Hermione.
We almost had them, if Daphne hadn't fainted.
Miss Greengrass did not faint from magical exhaustion,
Professor Quirrell said dryly.
Mr. Potter shot her in the back with a sleep hex, while your soldiers were distracted by the sight of their general flying into a wall. But congratulations nonetheless, Miss Granger, on almost defeating two chaotic legionnaires with a mere 24 sunshine soldiers.
The blood flaming in her cheeks grew a little hotter.
That was just... If I'd only figured out he was wearing armor.
Professor Quirrell gazed at her from over-touched fingers.
Of course there are ways you could have won, Miss Granger. There always are, in every lost battle. The world around us redounds with opportunities, explodes with opportunities, which nearly all folk ignore because it would require them to violate our habit of thought. In every battle, 1,000 Hufflepuff bones waiting to be sharpened into spears. If you had thought to try a massed finite incantatum on general principles, you would have dispelled Mr. Potter's suit of chainmail and everything else he was wearing except his underwear, which leads me to suspect that Mr. Potter did not quite realize his own vulnerability. Or you could have your soldiers swarm Mr. Potter and Mr. Longbottom and physically wrest their wands from their hands. Mr. Malfoy's own response was not what I would term well-reasoned, but at least he did not wholly ignore his 1,000 alternatives.
A sardonic smile.
But you, Miss Granger, had the misfortune to remember how to cast the stunning hex, and so you did not search your excellent memory for a dozen easier spells that might have proved efficacious. And you pinned all your army's hopes on your own person, so they lost spirits when you fell. Afterward, they continued to cast their futile sleep hexes, governed by the habits of fighting that had been trained into them, unable to break the pattern as Mr. Malfoy did. I cannot quite comprehend what goes through people's minds when they repeat the same failed strategy over and over. But apparently it is an astonishingly rare realization that you can try something else. And so the Sunshine Regiment was wiped out by two soldiers.
The defense professor grinned mirthlessly.
One perceives certain similarities to how 50 Death Eaters dominated all of magical Britain, and how our much-loved ministry continues in its rule.
The defense professor sighed.
Nonetheless, Miss Granger, the fact remains that this is not the first such defeat for you. In the previous battle, you and Mr. Malfoy united your forces, and yet you were fought to a standstill, so that you and Mr. Malfoy had to pursue Mr. Potter onto the roof. The Chaos Legion has now demonstrated, twice in succession, military strength equal to both other armies combined. This leaves me no choice. General Potter, you will select 8 soldiers from your army, including at least 1 chaotic lieutenant, to be divided among Dragon Army and the Sunshine Regiment.
What?
Hermione burst out again. She glanced over at the other generals and saw that Harry looked as shocked as her, while Draco Malfoy only looked resigned.
"General Potter is stronger than both of you together,"
Professor Quirrell said with calm precision.
"Your contest is over. He has won. And it is time to rebalance the 3 armies to present him with a renewed challenge."
"Professor Quirrell,"
said Harry.
"I didn't..."
"This is my decision as the Professor of Battle Magic at the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, and it is not subject to negotiation."
The words were still precise, but the look in Professor Quirrell's eyes chilled Hermione's blood, even though he was glaring at Harry and not at her.
"And I find it suspicious, Mr. Potter, that the moment you wished to isolate Miss Granger and Mr. Malfoy and force them to chase you onto the roof, you were able to annihilate just exactly as much of their united force as you pleased. Indeed, that is the level of performance I expected of you since the start of this year. And I am annoyed to discover that you have been holding back in my classes this entire time. I have seen what you can truly do, Mr. Potter. You are far beyond the point where Mr. Malfoy or Miss Granger can fight you on an equal level, and you will not be permitted to pretend otherwise. This, Mr. Potter, I tell you in my capacity as your professor. For you to learn to your full potential, you must exercise your full abilities and not hold back for any reason. Particularly, not childish threats over what your friends might think."
She left the defense professor's office with a larger army and less dignity, and feeling a lot like a sad little bug that had just been squished, and trying very, very hard not to cry.
"I wasn't holding back,"
Harry said as soon as they turned the first corner away from Professor Quirrell's office, the moment the wooden door faded out of sight behind the stone walls.
"I wasn't pretending. I never let either of you win."
She didn't answer. Couldn't answer. It would all break loose if she tried to say a word.
"Really?"
said Draco Malfoy. The Dragon General still had that air of resignation.
"Because Quirrell's right. You know, it's suspicious that you could beat nearly everyone in both armies as soon as you wanted to make us chase you onto the roof. And didn't you say something then, Potter, about us needing to beat you when you were fighting for real?"
The burning sensation was creeping up her throat, and when it reached her eyes, she would burst into tears, and from then on she would just be a crying little girl to both of them.
That,
Harry's voice said urgently. She wasn't looking at him, but his voice sounded like he had his head turned toward her.
That was... I tried a lot harder that time. There was an important reason. I had to, so I used a whole bunch of tricks I'd been saving up and...
She had always been trying her hardest, every time.
And I let out a side of myself I wouldn't usually use for something like a defense class.
So, if she ever got close to winning against Harry when it really mattered, he could just go into his dark side and crush her.
Was that it? Of course it was. She couldn't even look Harry in the eyes when he was being scary. How had she ever thought she could beat him for real? The corridor forked, and Harry Potter and Draco Malfoy went left toward a staircase that climbed to the second floor, and she went right instead. She didn't even know where that passage went, but right now she'd rather be lost in the castle.
"Excuse me, Draco," said Harry's voice, and then there was a pattering of footsteps behind her.
"Leave me alone," she said.
It came out sounding stern, but then she had to shut her mouth and press her lips together tightly and hold her breath to stop it all from coming out. That boy just kept on coming and ran around her and put himself in front of her because he was stupid that way. And Harry said, his voice now a high and desperate whisper,
"I didn't run away when you were beating me in all my classes except broomstick riding."
He didn't understand, and he would never understand. Harry Potter would never understand, because no matter what contest he lost, he would still be the boy who lived. If you were Harry Potter and Hermione Granger was beating you, then it meant everyone was expecting you to rise to the challenge. If you were Hermione Granger and Harry Potter was beating you, that meant you were just no one.
"It's not fair," she said.
Her voice was shaking, but she wasn't crying yet. Not yet.
"I shouldn't have to fight your dark side.
I'm only 12. That was what she thought then.
"I only used my dark side once, and that was when I had to."
"So today you beat my whole army, being just Harry."
She still wasn't crying yet, and she wondered what her face looked like right now. If she looked like an angry Hermione or a sad one.
Harry
said. His voice got a little lower.
"I wasn't really expecting to win that time. I know I said I was invincible, but that was just to try to scare you. I really just thought we'd slow you down for a bit."
She started walking again. Walked right past him. And as she passed, Harry's face tightened up like he was going to cry.
"Is Professor Quirrell right?"
came a high, desperate whisper from behind her.
"If I have you for a friend, will I always be afraid to do better because I know it will hurt your feelings? That's not fair, Hermione."
She took a breath and held it and ran, her feet pattering across the stone as fast as they could, running as fast as she dared with her vision all blurry, ran so that no one would hear her, and this time Harry didn't follow. Minerva was going over the Transfiguration parchment due Monday, and had just marked down to -200 points a fifth-year parchment with an error that could have potentially killed someone. During her first year as a professor, she'd been indignant at the folly of older students. Now she was just resigned. Some people not only never learned, they never noticed that they were hopeless. They stayed bright and eager and kept on trying. Sometimes they believed you when you told them, before they left Hogwarts, that they must never try anything unusual. Give up free transfiguration and use the art only through established charms. And sometimes they didn't. She was in the middle of trying to unravel a particularly convoluted answer when a knock at the door disrupted her thoughts. And it wasn't her office hours, but it had only taken a very short time as head of Gryffindor House for her to learn to suspend judgment. You could always deduct house points afterward.
"Come in,"
she said in a crisp voice. The young girl who entered her office had clearly been crying, and then afterward had washed her face in hopes it wouldn't show.
"Miss Granger,"
said Professor McGonagall. It had taken her a moment to recognize that face, with its eyes reddened and cheeks puffed.
"What happened?"
"Professor," said the young girl in a wavering voice, "you said that if I was ever worried or uncomfortable about anything, I should come to you at once."
"Yes," said Professor McGonagall. "No, what happened?"
The girl started to explain. Hermione stood still, and the stairs turned around her, a revolving helix that shouldn't have taken her anywhere at all, and instead bore her continuously upward. Hermione thought it seemed like the enchantment of the endless stair, which had been invented in 1733 by the wizard Aram Sabeti, who lived on top of Mount Everest in the days when no muggles could climb it. Only that couldn't be right, because Hogwarts was much older. Maybe the enchantment had been reinvented? She should have been frightened, should have been nervous about her second meeting with the headmaster. She was, in fact, frightened and nervous about her second meeting with the headmaster. Only Hermione Granger had been thinking. She had been thinking a lot, after she hadn't been able to run any further and had slid down against the wall with her lungs on fire, thinking while she curled up in a ball with her back against the chilly stone wall and her legs drawn up and crying. Even if she lost to Harry Potter, she was never, ever going to lose to Draco Malfoy. That was just totally, absolutely unacceptable, and Professor Quirrell had praised General Malfoy for not ignoring his 1,000 alternatives. And so, after Hermione had cried herself out, she had thought of 14 other spells she should have tried against Harry and Neville, and then she'd started wondering if she might be making the same sort of mistake about other things. And that was how she'd ended up knocking on Professor McGonagall's door. Not asking for help. Right now, Hermione didn't have any plans she could ask for help with. Just telling Professor McGonagall everything. Because when she'd thought of it, that had seemed like one of the 1,000 alternatives that Professor Quirrell had been talking about. And she told Professor McGonagall about how Harry Potter had changed since the day the phoenix had been on his shoulder, and about how people more and more seemed to see her as just something of Harry's. And how it seemed like Harry was pulling farther and farther away from everyone else in their school year, and went around with a sad air sometimes, like he was losing something. And she didn't know what to do anymore. And Professor McGonagall had told her that they needed to talk to the headmaster. And Hermione had felt worried. But then the thought had come to her that Harry Potter wouldn't have been scared of the headmaster. Harry Potter would have just barged ahead doing whatever he was trying to do. Maybe the thought had come to her. It was worth trying to be like that, not being scared, just doing whatever and seeing what happened to her. It couldn't really be worse. The endless stair stopped turning. The great oaken door in front of them with the brass griffin knocker opened without being touched. Behind a black oaken desk with dozens of drawers facing in every direction, looking like it had drawers set inside other drawers, was the silver-bearded headmaster of Hogwarts upon his throne, Albus Percival Wulfric Brian Dumbledore, into whose gently twinkling eyes Hermione looked for around 3 seconds before she was distracted by all the other things in the room. Some time later, she wasn't sure how long, but it was while she was trying to count the number of things in the room for the third time, and still not getting the same answer, even though her memory insisted that nothing had been added or removed, The headmaster cleared his throat and said,
Miss Granger.
Hermione's head snapped around, and she felt a little heat in her cheeks, but Dumbledore didn't appear annoyed with her at all, only serene, and with an inquiring look in those mild, half-glassed eyes.
Hermione?
Said Professor McGonagall. The older witch's voice was gentle, and her hand rested reassuringly on Hermione's shoulder.
Please tell the headmaster what you said to me about Harry.
Hermione began speaking. Despite her newfound resolution, her voice still stumbled a little with the nervousness, as she described how Harry had changed in the last few weeks since Fawkes had been on his shoulder. When she was done, there was a pause, and then the headmaster sighed.
"I am sorry, Hermione Granger," said Dumbledore.
Those blue eyes had grown sadder as she spoke.
"That is unfortunate, but I cannot say it is unexpected. That is a hero's burden, which you see."
"A hero?"
said Hermione. She looked up nervously at Professor McGonagall and saw that the Transfiguration Professor's face had grown tight, though her hand still squeezed Hermione's shoulder reassuringly.
"Yes," said Dumbledore. "I was a hero myself once, before I was a mysterious old wizard, in the days when I opposed Grindelwald.